Welcome back, friends. Ecclesiastes 8 today, and Chris Langham here again as Solomon continues the investigation that he began back in chapter 7. So I turned my mind to understand, to investigate, and to search out wisdom and the scheme of things, and to understand the stupidity of wickedness and the madness of folly. I still love that. The stupidity of wickedness. Thank you, Solomon, for blunt truth. How is it that so many of us are dumb enough to think that doing wrong will work out right in the end? And again, look around. Looks like it's working out for some people, so far. So Solomon continues his investigation. Let's dive in at verse 1. Who is like the wise? Who knows the explanation of things? A person's wisdom brightens their face and changes its hard appearance. Great verse. There's something different about a person with wisdom. Their face is brighter. Their appearance is changed because they understand things. Next, Solomon offers observations from his unique vantage point. He was, after all, the king. And as king, he was often called upon to pass judgment, to provide justice, to stop the wicked and their schemes. So he offers us some kingly advice in verse 2. Obey the king's command, I say, because you took an oath before God. That may sound a bit self-serving, but understand that Solomon is trying to establish justice and order, and that requires cooperation. The context here appears to be a court setting, where the king is asked to judge a case and provide justice. So when the king passes judgment, work with him. And in verse 3, do not be in a hurry to leave the king's presence. Do not stand up for a bad cause, for he will do whatever he pleases. Since a king's word is supreme, who can say to him, what are you doing? Whoever obeys his command will come to no harm, and the wise heart will know the proper time and procedure. In other words, respect authority and respect the system. The wise heart knows that procedure and protocol are necessary, so be patient. Look to Bible heroes like Joseph before Pharaoh, Daniel and friends before Nebuchadnezzar, and Jesus before Pilate. They all showed respect and trusted in God's justice, even before corrupt leaders. Now, this passage doesn't really address a corrupt system, but it does recognize the challenges of any man-made justice system. It's not perfect, but you've got to work with it to get results. Verse 6. For there is a proper time and procedure for every matter, though a person may be weighed down by misery. Basically, injustice is rough, but be patient. Justice will come. And that simple truth carries Solomon out of the courtroom and back into life, and he makes some philosophical observations. In verse 7, as no one has power over the wind to contain it, so no one has power over the time of their death. The point here is that we are not in control. We don't know the future, we can't control the wind, and we don't control death. That should humble us, and should also put wickedness into a different perspective. Back in verse 8, as no one is discharged in time of war, so wickedness will not release those who practice it. That one is deep. Wickedness will not let you go. Sin is like a war. You can start it, but it will finish you. Numbers 32 reminds us that your sin will find you out. Now, it doesn't always look like that right away. Solomon has already observed that sometimes the wicked live long in their wickedness. But in verse 10, then too, I saw the wicked buried, those who used to come and go from the holy place and receive praise in the city where they did this. This too is meaningless. So the wicked thrived for a time, but they too were buried. Some of them even went to church, showed up, received praise, living wicked all along. But that was fleeting, and now they're buried. Again, Solomon's view of life is limited, but he knows that there must be a further judgment. Verse 11, when the sentence for a crime is not quickly carried out, people's hearts are filled with schemes to do wrong. Basic cause and effect. When lawbreakers don't see consequences, they get bold. Yet here we see again the stupidity of wickedness. It is phenomenally short-sighted. It's stupid to believe that just because I didn't pay the price today, that I got away with it. Verse 12. Although a wicked person who commits 100 crimes may live a long time, I know that it will go better with those who fear God, who are reverent before him. Yet because the wicked do not fear God, it will not go well with them, and their days will not lengthen like a shadow. Sometimes justice is slow here on earth. Sometimes it's downright backwards. Yet Solomon knows that God will set it right. God is just. For us, the crucial element is the fear of God. Respect the ultimate judge. And yet, in verse 14, there is something else meaningless that occurs on earth. Notice the perspective, on earth. The righteous who get what the wicked deserve, and the wicked who get what the righteous deserve. This too, I say, is meaningless. And so Solomon laments, justice just isn't complete on earth. Even he, as king, with all his power, couldn't set it right. And he offers some advice. Verse 15, so I commend the enjoyment of life, because there is nothing better for a person under the sun than to eat and drink and be glad. Now, some Bible scholars read Solomon's conclusion here and say that he got it all wrong because his view was limited and he was far from God. But I believe there's some good wisdom here for us. I don't think that Solomon is encouraging us to go live it up and sin all you want. This is not Epicurean hedonism. He already laid that out as empty and worthless. What he is saying is enjoy life as it is. Enjoy work. Enjoy family. Enjoy the beauty of this world. Yes, fight for justice. Yes, live righteous and do good. Make a difference. Isaiah 58 sets our calling out clearly. But there's also a reality that you and I will not be the ones to right every wrong and heal every wound. Work at it, but don't forget to enjoy the work. Paul fought for justice, and he said, rejoice in the Lord always. He also called Timothy to serve God and make a difference, while also reminding him that God richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. That doesn't mean we should abuse God's gifts. It just means that we should enjoy them. Live joyfully. Back in verse 15, then joy will accompany them in their toil all the days of the life God has given them under the sun. And finally, Solomon reflects in verse 16, when I applied my mind to know wisdom and to observe the labor that is done on earth, people getting no sleep day or night, then I saw all that God has done. No one can comprehend what goes on under the sun. Despite all their efforts to search it out, no one can discover its meaning. Even if the wise claim they know, they cannot really comprehend it. No matter how wise we are, even if we read the Bible front to back again and again, search out every mystery of science and examine every philosophy, full comprehension is still beyond us. But that's okay. Even as we get a much fuller understanding of God's plan through Jesus and in the New Testament, there is still so much mystery. Listen to Paul in Romans 11. Oh, the depth of the riches of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable his judgments and his paths beyond tracing out. So do we just give up on knowing? Of course not. Deuteronomy 29:29. The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may follow all the words of this law. See, God keeps his secrets, and I'm okay with that. But he has revealed enough for me to walk in wisdom and live in righteousness, to fight the fight of faith and enjoy life as it is, and when it's all done, to trust him to work out the details.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.